Time is running out to save the planet's wildlife. A UN biodiversity summit in China is demanding urgent action. But the world's failed to meet any of the goals set 10 years ago to protect nature. So what will this conference actually achieve? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. Today with me, Peter Dobbie. Leaders from around the world will gather in Glasgow for the COP26 Climate Change Summit in just under 3 weeks from now. A closely linked UN summit on biodiversity is taking place right now in China with the aim of preserving our planet's wildlife. Plants and animals are disappearing at an alarming rate. The UN has said human activity is driving a million species towards extinction. Agriculture, pollution and climate change are threatening ecosystems worldwide. The UN's biosecurity chief opened the conference in Kunming with this warning.
We are facing our moment of truth. If we are to meet the 2050 vision of living in harmony with nature, we must take actions this decade to halt and reverse biodiversity loss and put biodiversity on a path to recovery by 2030 at the latest. This is the defining challenge of our time.
China's President Xi Jinping has launched a $230 million fund to help protect ecosystems in the developing countries. Here's what he had to say.
Facing the dual task of restoring the economy and protecting the environment, developing countries need even more help and support. We need to strengthen our unity and work together to get through this challenging time so that the results of development and better ecology will be fairer.
The summit in China includes parties to the UN Convention on Biological Diversity, or CBD. In 2010, representatives agreed on a 10-year plan to protect species and to conserve ecosystems, but none of their goals were achieved by the 2020 deadline. Countries now aim to come up with a new set of targets for the next 10 years. This includes putting 30% of the Earth's land and oceans under protected status, otherwise known as the 30 by 30, and eliminating plastic waste and reducing the use of harmful pesticides. OK, there we are. Here we go. Let's bring in our guests. Joining us from London, Gavin Edwards, Global Coordinator, New Deal for Nature and People at the Worldwide Fund International. In Nairobi, we have Nancy Githega, Kenya Country Director at the African Wildlife Foundation. And in Brussels, we have Stefan Singer, Senior Climate Science and Global Energy Policy Advisor at Climate Action Network International. Welcome to you all. Nancy in Nairobi, coming to you first. We're talking about COP15. We've been talking about it for a decade. Nothing apparently has changed. How come?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is another COP15. And as we are saying, looking back at the last 10 years, 2011 to 2020, we did not achieve the commitments that were made globally. Many countries did not achieve that. In fact, almost all did not achieve it. So we are saying it did not work. There was commitment. Was there sufficient action? Probably not. Was there sufficient resources? Probably not. So now looking at 2020 and beyond, what we are calling beyond 2020, what then should change if we are going to achieve what wasn't achieved in the last 10 years? So quite a lot, and unfortunately also coming at the backdrop of bigger challenges of climate change, bigger challenges of COVID as we currently have. So then commitment now, and as we speak about post-2020, has to be matched with action, has to be matched with resources.
Stefan Singer in Brussels. Climate change, or the main aspects of climate change, we're told all the time, can be reversible. But once an ecosystem is it lost forever?
You need to talk to evolution. No one knows. But the point is, if we lose species, these species are gone forever. So it's an irreversible loss. We have the same thing with climate change. Some of the losses or some of the impacts of climate change are, of course, reversible. That's the reason why we are fighting for deep emissions reductions, about 50% of fossil fuel emissions reductions by 2030, which is based on scientific recommendations. and further on phasing out fossil fuels completely and stopping and reversing the destruction and degradation of ecosystems and forests as a very strong component to store carbon, to protect biodiversity, which is important for our life and for many other purposes. We cannot, in climate change, we cannot basically hold in the short term and reverse in the short term the deglaciation of polar ice caps, unfortunately, or the losses of the Himalayan glaciers. Once we lose glaciers in Greenland or in the Antarctica, once there's a global deglaciation process, it's very, very late. It's very, very difficult to recapture that one in centuries or even millennia. The same is true for resulting sea level rise. And if sea level rise occurs, we lose very important coastal ecosystems, populations, frontline communities who live there in small island states and countries like Bangladesh, for instance, on other low-lying areas and coastal areas, mainly in developing countries or in cities. It's very difficult to reclaim that land back once it's flooded with salt water for many reasons. So I think irreversibility in our time scale, which is the life of a person in 100 years, also in climate change, is not necessarily possible. It might be possible in the longer term that at some point in time the glaciers return, but this is beyond our control, beyond our lifeline.
Okay.
But not the time. It's not possible for species. If they're gone, they're gone.
Okay, Gavin Edwards in London. We think, or we're assuming, there is a momentum being built here to set new targets for the year 2030. Will those targets be missed as well?
Well, as Nancy said, we had a little bit of a lost decade where not enough action was taken. This time, it has to be different. This time, it feels different. Compared to a decade ago, now we have many world leaders. 92 world leaders have signed a pledge for nature and endorsed that pledge and are committed to implementing that pledge. We've seen 1,000 CEOs from businesses around the world commit on nature and advocate for a strong action plan on nature and start to adjust their own business practices on nature as well. We've seen the finance sector and central bankers start to look at how they are investing in and managing risks related to nature loss in their businesses, particularly the agricultural sector as well. And we see civil society in greater and greater numbers, faith organizations, humanitarian groups and others raising their voice too. Also, we see new funding, new money committed. Just a couple of weeks ago, we saw $5 billion in new philanthropic funding for conservation. Today, we heard President Xi of China in his opening remarks at the Kunming conference committed $230 million funding to help developing countries as well. Now, all of these numbers are big. They're not nowhere near big enough. But what they are doing is creating that positive momentum for change. So this time we feel if there is a strong action plan put in place in Kunming, the context is very much different than a decade ago. People are starting to realize nature is no longer a luxury because we like wildlife in faraway places. This is about us. In the same way that climate change is about humanity and civilization, losing nature is too. That is more and more understood by more people than ever before. That gives us a fighting chance that the next decade can and should and will be different.
Nancy in Nairobi, coming back to you. You're in a major African city there in Nairobi. Africa, the African countries aren't necessarily known for manufacturing very much. It is a continent of biodiversity. You've got deserts in the north of the continent. You've got lush rainforest-type countries across that Sahel heading down towards the southern half of Africa. Is it particularly acute for the African countries, and what are they doing to push back against this?
Yeah, I think for Africa, as you rightly said, we are a nature-based economy. Most of our economies, most of our livelihoods are actually nature-based, biodiversity-based. So anything happening to that biodiversity has been happening in the last few years impacts the livelihoods of every single African. We do not have the manufacturing companies or huge industries, so most of us are reliant on that biodiversity. And therefore, when it fails, then we are looking at failing economies. We are also looking at failing nations. And I think we've seen that when we have had either extreme events, rain events, or we've had extreme droughts. So this impacts and takes us back very, very far in terms of our economies and also our livelihoods. And therefore, for us, maybe more importantly than any other continent, it is actually important that there are commitments and actions that are actionable. As we've said, the last decade, maybe not much was achieved. Actually, we are struggling and are saying there isn't enough resources put to ensure that biodiversity actually has its place on the table like we have had climate change. It should not be an orphan. Biodiversity shouldn't be an orphan. It's largely impacted by climate change. And therefore, the decisions that are made probably at climate change, where we have negotiations and resources set aside, should be much more or equal to what would be put for biodiversity. Without it, then we are talking of an Africa that cannot survive. And with a large population, a growing youth population, all of us very dependent on the natural resources, then for us, biodiversity, this is not just a discussion. This is about our livelihoods.
Stefan, under the Chinese leadership over the coming decade or so, I suspect we're going to hear more of the so-called 30 times 30, i.e. 30% of our land and 30% of our oceans need to be protected. How do you square that, however, with the next Donald Trump, for example, a president or a prime minister someplace who gets into office saying jobs, 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 and or the next discovery of an undiscovered massive field of oil or gas underneath the coral reefs of Australia? How do you stop people exploiting those areas in that kind of scenario?
That's a very challenging question. Let me be honest. It's not the good Chinese government against the bad potential U.S. government. I think the choices was the people who were impacted. If we see large-scale oil, gas, and coal reserves being currently exploited, if you would carry on with the exploitation of only the currently known and currently operating mines, oil fields, and gas fields, that would be enough to wreck the climate. We do not need new fields. The IEA will come out very soon on that one. They have said this again. In order to save the climate, to protect the world from damaging climate change, which affects in turn biodiversity, we need to stop all new oil, gas, and coal development very strongly, because we already have too many. So even if they explore new ones, this is already much too much what we have available to speak for doing this big conversion. And I trust people. I trust frontline communities. I trust the communities on the ground in developing countries, but also in developed countries. I trust the people who have seen and experienced climate change, the droughts, the floods from Yakutia in Siberia in summer, to people in Africa, which have seen failures of the harvests, people in Latin America, which have seen going up the rainforest in the Amazon and flames, et cetera, people in the Arctic, which see the dwindling of the ice sheets, including my own country in Germany. What we have seen in summer, these horrendous floods, which killed up to 300, 400 people just in 2 days, and the big destruction that occurred. People get waking up, and they will make happen that this is not happening again, and they will make sure, I hope, and that's what we're fighting for, that this kind of development is not happening, that not a new Trump is possible, that we will come to a point where we will be fighting fossil fuels and new development. And we're getting more and more support from conventional, normal institutions like the International Energy Agency, like the IPCC, like scientific institutions, that we have a choice to make. And we all benefit from that one, to go to renewables, to go to energy efficiency, to protect the forests.
Stefan, I'm going to pause you there, because I just want to kind of knock that point forward and talk to Gavin Edwards in London for the next minute or so. Gavin, one of the driving principles here is that we have got to save the planet, but also to save these ecosystems and the species, we have got to halve the footprint of production and consumption, everything from non-electric cars up to and including single-use paper coffee cups. Halving production and consumption on paper sounds like a really good idea, and we can all, of course, be the change we want to see. But if you do that, doesn't it mean massive unemployment?
Quite the opposite, in fact. And we just put out a study recently which estimated quite a few million, 39 million new jobs could be created in a very short time frame. By investing in the right technologies and the right industries. Over the decade, the next decade, World Economic Forum estimated over 350 million jobs could be created as well. So there is a clear win-win here. It's okay to protect places. We have to do that. If you protect large parts of the world, 30% of the world, for every dollar spent on protection, $5 can be returned in economic development as well. So if you couple that with a real rethink about how we sustainably produce and consume everything from the food we eat to the plastic we consume, et cetera, it is possible. It's not only possible, it is absolutely essential as well. And with those kinds of measures committed over the next years, we could see, instead of nature negative and us losing nature, we could see a nature positive world. If we can couple that with a net zero world, where emissions are becoming a thing of the past because we're leaving that oil and coal in the ground, as Stefan Singer laid out there, then we do stand a fighting chance at the end of the decade. It is possible, and it is good for the economy, and it is good for local jobs and local employment as well.
Nancy in Nairobi, an awful lot of what we're discussing seems to me is about over-exploitation of these biodiverse areas, the ecosystems, the species that live in them, that rely, that need to carry on existing within those biodiverse areas. Is it possible to exploit these areas, not over-exploit them, but exploit them, use them, utilise the minerals, the oil, the gas, whatever, that's underneath them, around them, near them, but leave them the way they were before humanity went in, utilise the resources and then left?
Yeah, a good balance, and maybe a difficult balance, because it's not a choice between development and conservation. Actually, there is no choice there. It is development with conservation. So we are saying we can develop, but develop in a sustainable way. There are critically sensitive areas on this globe. There are critical water areas where we shouldn't actually be exploring for minerals or oil or, you know, any exploration there, because these are critically sensitive areas and those need to be left. And I think when we are talking about a 30 by 30 or an ambition like that, what we are saying is that there are areas which need to be left because then they help balance our existence with that of nature. However, when we are looking at investments, we are pushing for sustainable investments. Africa must develop. But can we do that? Can we have investments that are sustainable? So that if it is infrastructure, it is sustainable infrastructure. If it is areas that need to be left as they were, then these areas are left as they were. We've already lost a lot as Africa, as the African nations, in Kenya, in many of our nations. But what we are saying is that then this needs to stop. And as we look at the UN Decade for Restoration, then restore what has been lost, but still develop in a sustainable way. So it is not a choice of one or the other. It is more, you know, deliberate choice of investments, where we are also calling upon investors and the banking institutions to also ensure that when they are lending money for investments, then these are sustainable investments, not investments that come to destroy our very biodiversity, our very natural capital, where most of the Africans rely on. So sustainable investments is what we would be calling for from businesses across the globe.
Stefan, in Brussels, you were shaking your head there as I was asking Nancy in Nairobi that question. Is it your sense that we've got to move from a wish list of it'd be really good if we could all achieve this together to a list of must achieve this together?
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the questions we're getting asked very often. So what are your three key targets you want to achieve? That means we have to drop 50 other targets. And this is always a kind of choice, a kind of hierarchization we have to do as NGOs, as CSOs. Governments have to do the same, and it's difficult to do. But let me tell you as a rule of thumb. The rule of thumb is not necessarily, although it's a good step forward, to protect 30% of our land, of our oceans, of our land, of our seas from future exploitation. That's a good start. But in the end, we have 8 billion people on Earth very soon, and all we have a growing and needed lifestyle. Many people are still poor in the developing countries. They need to grow their livelihoods, undoubtedly. They will have more consumption. I mean, we cannot ignore that, but we need to support it, and it's up to the global north to reduce its consumption. But then I would argue we need a kind of understanding that we need to, not necessarily to protect, but to manage sustainably all land, all ocean, all lakes, all rivers, all mountains. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Okay.
I think that's a challenge we have to do, because we impact also another crisis. We impact on freshwater. We impact on resource availability. We impact on soil erosion. We impact on whatever. And all is underpinned by the growing inequality between the rich and the poor, both within nation and among nations.
Okay, let's just pick up on that point, Stefan, for a second about inequality with Gavin Edwards in London. Gavin, is part of the problem here that the financing is trickle-down top to bottom and the conversation is the other way, bottom to top? It's fantastic, of course, that Jeff Bezos gives $1 billion to various global climate change organisations, but trickle-down financing arguably never works because it's never spent properly in the right places at the right time. And the conversation is going on literally at ground level. That's why, for example, we need to get to a stage where Indigenous people's rights are enshrined in the Acts of Parliament or the Acts of legislation that cover these areas of biodiversity.
Well, exactly right, Peter. First of all, if you look at the large intact areas left in the world that are high priority for conservation, they overlap very, very heavily with Indigenous peoples and local communities. They've been the traditional stewards of these lands, and to this day, they've been a part of ensuring that they are still functioning ecosystems. So clearly, communities need to be able to be supported in this. Their rights need to be respected. Any attempts at conservation have to include the free, prior, informed consent of communities. And any development, be it tourism or other kinds of development, communities have to absolutely benefit from those conservation measures as well. There are plenty of examples around the world where this is the case. Those models do and can work. And so that's one of the areas that needs to be invested in. It's not the only one. If you pick apart the whole need for conservation funding, the Paulson Institute estimated about $700 billion is needed to actually fund conservation efforts. That pays back to the economy in all sorts of ways, whether it's helping avoid a future pandemic like COVID-19, or whether it's helping a local community get out of poverty as well. And that funding, it doesn't just come from the philanthropists of the world like Jeff Bezos. It comes from governments. It comes from removing subsidies, perverse subsidies, which are right now undermining nature, by, for example, ensuring a food system is unsustainable and then happily rewarding farmers for those unsustainable practices as well. That needs to change from governments too. If we're to stand a chance on this.
Understood. Thanks for that, Gavin. In the last minute of the programme, Nancy, coming to you, are you optimistic or pessimistic that we will hit this 30 by 30 target? Because at the moment, I find it astonishing that only 8% of our oceans on the planet are officially protected, because underneath the surface, there is something that if we lose it, it's gone forever.
I choose actually to remain optimistic. I think if the commitment that is being shown by nations can be actioned, then there is actually a lot of hope. I think what has not been pursued, for instance, is this 30 by 30 should also include those areas beyond the jurisdiction of nations, the deep seas, where everybody wants to go in there with their big vessels and fish and harvest and exploit. So if this is also part of the 30 by 30, there is hope, and I think it is doable. And the 30 by 30 should also not be for some countries, but should be taken as a global target where each country also sees its role to play in that 30 by 30. But beyond the lands, I think the deep seas also give us an opportunity if we can manage that sustainably. So there's actually hope. I remain optimistic.
Nice to finish a depressing conversation on an optimistic note. Nancy, thank you so much. We are out of time. Thank you to our guests. They were Gavin Edwards, Nancy Githiga and Stefan Singer. Thank you, too, for your company. You can see the show again via the website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter via @AJInsideStory. From me, Peter Dobby, and the entire team here in Doha, thanks for watching. We will do it again at the usual time tomorrow. Bye-bye.